Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's the new and improved Friday on the Front Porch, now with Yellow Jacket. No, he's dead. My karma's all screwed for the evening, or maybe forever, I don't know. I'll probably come back as a Yellow Jacket now. And I'll have a mortal Yellow Jacket terror of the soul of a Sperry Topsider coming ever nearer my little noggin. Because that's what it just did. Oh, that might not be a Yellow Jacket. By God, he's still got enough nervous system that he wants to sting the hell out of something. But, okay, so I won't be, I hope not. Yeah, they put out pheromones when you squish them. And I'm sort of scanning the air above me here to see if it's, you know, I mean, because we've all read Ricky Tikki Tavi and we know about Nagaina, and Nagaina did not appear. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and be part of the real-time multimedia madcap zany extravaganza. Which, this evening, if you go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and click on the word chat room on the tab there, and you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you're not using an Apple product, and you're not using a Mac, and you can use Java, why, by God, you'll be met by Anatole and Jay Cruz and Jug of Punch, Steve from Georgia Stan, Stockton Larry, and VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third-stage guild navigator for whom we are all transparent, even though he's that, he has not folded space to become man cave because it's probably like a billion degrees in the man cave. There's probably, liquid steel flowing out of it. It's so damn hot in the man cave. Yeah. Really, this is The Horn for the 12th day of August 2016. I got through the "Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid" part. This is listener-supported radio, and we still have the best part of a challenge on the table, courtesy of Chris in the Northwest Territories. You notice how I said territories? Yes. I'm working on my pronunciation. Of course, I doubt they say territories up there, but I'm sure somewhere in the empire they still say territories. Thank you very kindly to our subscribers of that $150 challenge. Mark in Minnesota, and our buddy Psychoticus knocked down $15.50 of it overnight as subscribers, so that took us down to 134.50, and we have a brand new subscriber. Thank you for joining in, Angela. Angela joined in, so Angela in Oregon, and that means let's see, 124.51. $119.50 to go in the challenge there, and a general $200 to go in fundraising for this evening. Thank you very, very, very kindly. So, you know, it's over at headonradionetwork.com. You go to the Contribute tab. You click on that. If you would like to become a subscriber, we'd love to have your company. And just click on the Make This Donation or Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, and bang, you'll be right there. So, that's how that works, unless you prefer the United States Postal Service. In which case, you can drop me an email to bobkincaid@gmail.com to let me know it's on the way so that I can tell Boss Man Wayne so that he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck when he goes to our mailbox at the UPS store that we share with the Klan. I mean, we don't share the mailbox, but they've got a mailbox there, too. And that way, all he has to do is take the old Serbian shillelagh with him when he goes to pick up our mail, which arrives at The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Ta-da! Mm-hmm. No, Marty, the Sparky, being a third-stage guild navigator, has not run out of spice at all. It's just that he knows better than to fold space into the man cave because he'd spontaneously combust. Yes. So it is. It's Friday on the front porch, and we've got a lot to. We've got a lot of possibilities out there, including just a little bit of a little bit of news, real live, honest to goodness, news. Remember Jerry Sandusky? Jerry Sandusky, who at Penn State University was a kiddie rapist. Yeah. Who went up the river for being a kiddie rapist. 10 boys he raped. Well, he's spent some time in the stir, and now he's decided he doesn't like it so good and he'd like to get out. So his lawyers have filed a motion for a new trial. It was 30 years at Penn State University that various and sundry people looked the other way while Jerry Sandusky raped little boys. But now he says that he wants out, and he wants out because he says that his original trial lawyer, a man by the name of Joseph Amendola, provided incompetent or ineffective assistance as counsel. What Sandusky now says is that at his original trial, he really, really, really wanted to take the stand, but that his original trial lawyer said, "You're out of your freaking mind. You'll get eaten alive on cross-examination." But, there's always one lawyer out there who's willing to criticize the work of another. So his current lawyer, Alexander Lindsay, says, that was incompetent counsel. Mm-hmm. So Lindsay put him on the stand and he testified. He said, "Have you ever had anal or oral sex with anyone?" And Sandusky said, "Absolutely not. That is foreign to me. It is disgusting." This after 4 years in the Pennsylvania state prison system. I think it's fairly safe to say that, somebody's perjuring himself. So watch this space as we all wait to find out if the court in Pennsylvania is going to be gullible enough to turn Jerry Sandusky back out on a population that would probably forgive him. I mean, the people who love them some Penn State football are not far different from those who love them some University of Alabama football. I mean, they are the fanniest of fans. See what I did there? Fanniest, yeah. Mm-hmm. Ew. I was kind of hoping we'd never hear from Jerry Sandusky again. Because, well, it would be too soon. But no, I guess this will go on and on and on and on. Speaking, though, of people who really didn't have sex. You remember, a few months ago when we played that very, very interesting audio of the governor of Alabama, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, former deacon, former member of Tuscaloosa First Baptist Church, Robert Bentley, his own church threw him, the Baptist threw him out over his philandering and romping. Romping, that's a phrase that we use here in the hills and hollers of Appalachistan to describe it when somebody's caught in flagrante delicto, which is a Latin phrase meaning bed, somebody else's. Well, we played that audio, and we heard that audio, and him talking about how he loved to get up behind her and wrap his arms around her and put his hands on her breast and whatnot. And, apparently, Republican Alabama Governor Robert Bentley became somewhat of a cottage industry. Last year, Alabama State Representative Alan Farley recorded a phone conversation with him, and in that conversation, once again, Robert Bentley said, "No, I did not have sex with that woman. No." Never. And by way of explaining where the recordings were coming from, Governor Bentley, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian Governor Robert Bentley, you know, he's not perfect, just saved, just forgiven. Casino gambling people are feeding this story. These guys, let me tell you what they're the most concerned about. They're most concerned about a lottery and me signing a compact with the Porch Band of Creek Indians. That's what they're concerned about. This is a loaded gun right there. And they will do anything because these guys are poised to make hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah. But, Bentley did, that Farley was, primed to ask Alabama Attorney General, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Republican, Luther Strange, because he is, to investigate Bentley. And it really didn't work because Governor Bentley is currently under investigation by the Alabama House Judiciary Committee, which is, of course, a Republican-dominated committee, as is the entire legislature. They're considering whether to impeach the governor. And the governor, meanwhile, is hoping to, run out the clock. You see, Talibanistan does not have a lottery, but they do have casino gambling down to a little old place called Atmore, where the Porch Band of Muskogee people battled and finally got themselves a casino, which apparently is doing land office business because it's about all there is. I mean, you can't get so much as a $1 scratch-off ticket in Talibanistan because Jeebus. So, not having, I did not have sex with that woman, nor did I stand behind her and wrap my arms around her and caress her breastises like I done told her on the telephone that I like to do. Because in the name of Jesus. Yeah. Oh, dokie. So we've got that. Let's go ahead and ruin food porn for the evening. You know, one of these stories comes out every so often. Animal rights groups, some of whom are saner than others. Animal rights groups like to get hidden cameras inside chicken processing facilities. Because, well, they'd like to remind you of what a nasty business industrial chicken farming really is. You know, because it is. Just like industrial hog farming is disgusting. Just like industrial CAFO beef farming is disgusting. Because it's the only way it's not the only way, but it's the most corporately friendly way. Not earth-friendly, certainly not animal-friendly, but corporately friendly way to provide massive amounts of meat to a hungry world that even I, as a carnivore, will admit, I mean, I'm not a carnivore, I'm an omnivore, but as an omnivore, I will admit that the world would be probably a lot better place if we weren't meat eaters. I just haven't found a really good way to give up meat and still enjoy eating food. I know there are people who have, but I haven't. So, Tyson Foods has a facility, we'll call it, there in the Old Dominion of Virginia, right? And Compassion Over Killing snuck a hidden camera in where they recorded images of the workers at the Tyson plant punching chickens, kicking chickens. That's kind of tough. Chicken kicking, yeah, kicking chicken. I think there's actually a fast food chicken joint somewhere that refers to itself as kicking chicken. Only these are really, you know, made daily from freshly kicked chickens and flinging chickens. Now there is not a fast food chicken joint that refers to flinging chicken. No. And then the coup de grace, literally and figuratively, came in an image of one worker at the Tyson plant crushing the head of a live chicken under his boot. Which, you know, I was kind of thinking about when the sole of my Sperry Topsider was coming down on that hapless hornet, mud dauber, yellow jacket that you get the idea. Poor little bastard. Meanwhile, there at corporate in Springdale, Arkansas, a spokesperson for the Tyson immortal corporate person said, "We're disgusted by the actions of the individuals in the video. We're gonna take some more steps to make sure that people don't stomp no more birds." You see, Tyson has a problem. This is the fifth time, according to Reuters, This is the fifth time since 2015 that the activists have secretly snuck in a camera to abuse, to record chicken abuse at a Tyson facility. Now, in case you're wondering what Tyson is involved in, it's not just stuff that's marked Tyson. You know how when you go through Mickey D's and it says no hormones, all natural white meat chicken for their McNuggets, because they want you to understand that they're not using that pink slime no more now. Well, McDonald's, that's some kicking chicken at McDonald's. They'll also serve you kicking chicken at KFC. If you buy yourself some sausage from Jimmy Dean, that's kicking chicken. Cold cuts from Sara Lee is kicking chicken. And ballpark hot dogs is kicking chicken. The executive director of Compassion Over Killing, Erica Meyer, said, "Animal cruelty is not the product of a few bad actors. It's a systemic issue that the company needs to address." But realistically, the only way the company can ever make the animal rights people happy is by turning all the chickens out to be happy, free-range, cruelty-free chickens that will then, you know, just sort of wander the fruited plain and live out their happy chicken lives, never being eaten by coyotes or attacked by hawks or anything. No. Meanwhile, both Tyson and Compassion Over Killing say that they have, by God, dropped the dime on the chicken kickers and the chicken stompers and the chicken flingers. And Tyson said it obviously hasn't gone far enough to stop the mistreatment of animals. It went on to say that they're evaluating other steps to ensure our policies are being followed. Let's not talk about one of the central causes of this problem. One of which, mind you, is what do we call it? Self-regulation? Self-reporting? See, we'd have a lot less of this if it weren't for the fact that we have so goddamn many fiscal constitutional conservatives who want a small government. A small government conservatives. And you may remember back in the 90s, those of you who are around and paying attention to it, back when William Jefferson Clinton bit his thumb and held that thumb up to us and said, "The era of big government is over." Well, see, you need a big government if you're going to have people going out who are, you know, government employees who are inspecting plants where they do their chicken kicking. But we can't have that because the era of big government is over. And that's kind of a shame. You might recall, again, that within the last 2 years, I think it was, and for a few years before that, the federal government under the Obama administration at the FDA, or maybe the Department of Agriculture, I can't recall which, that they put in place a trial policy of self-reporting at, you know, chicken-kicking facilities. Now, the damn thing failed miserably. And consequently, the Obama administration said, "Hey, let's make it industry-wide," which they then did. Yes. So there's that. And it's not just chicken, it's pork, it's meat. See, I like me some big government. I like me some big government that can go through and make sure my chickens ain't being kicked. Or that my pork ain't being punched. or that my beef ain't being brutalized. And I'd like for the people who do that to be adequately compensated and have retirement benefits, pension plans, health insurance, all that kind of stuff. But we can't have that because the 1% might cry like the little goddamn babies they are if and we were to, you know, fully fund the U.S. Department of Agriculture so that they'd have lots of people with those little purple stamps walking around going kahoomp past USDA, you know, after the place had been thoroughly and completely inspected, neglected, rejected, and you get the idea. No. We got to have us some small, limited government. I mean, after all, that's what the industry representatives who write the checks to the members of Congress, well, you know, that's what they're paying for. Yeah, all kinds of interesting stuff apparently goes on at the Tyson plant. Among other things, Tyson said that it had stopped the practice known as boning or beak modification. See, male chickens are kind of cranky with each other and territorial, and they peck at each other, hence cockfighting. And Tyson had this process where they would shove a piece of plastic through the beaks of live male chickens. And Tyson described it as a historical way the industry has used to keep males from eating food intended for females. Because the males will do that too. Damn. But now they say, no, we really have stopped it now. And, of course, on Wall Street, the news was swiftly received and dealt with as Tyson stock went through the floor because a few extra sacks of chicken feed because of the greedy-ass males. Wall Street recognized that would affect the 92nd decimal place of the share value of the shareholders of the immortal corporate person that is Tyson. No, not really. Tyson had record operating margins in its chicken segment. Parts is parts, y'all. In the quarter that ended on July the 2nd. In 2015, Tyson reported sales of $11.4 billion. Good work if you can get it. Not really, because that's the other problem. The workers. Because there's not a whole lot of people who are lining up outside the Tyson plant for a chicken-kicking job. Kicking. Well, see, there we go. Brother Deacon Asa with a counterpoint to my big government argument. I know you like your big government, Bob. I'll grant you that. But then tell me this. How is Merca going to be a beacon of freedom if your average garden variety blue-collar worker ain't free to kick them chickens? How's you going to get your hate filet on at 99 cents a pop, huh? Tell me. And see, suddenly, that's when totalitarian socialism, with all that chicken inspecting, just squeezes the joy right out of our free market capitalist lives. Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. But see, that's the other side of it. There's nothing in this Reuters story, but I have read it in the past. about the abysmal working conditions in which the chicken workers work. And dear God, think for a minute what it must be like when the chicken kickers get home. The hell you mean we're having chicken for dinner, woman? Yeah, because see, nobody's driving a piece of plastic through the men's beaks to keep them from eating the food meant for their youngins. Don't worry. Absolutely nothing is gonna change. No. So we got that. Just a little ray of sunshine, ain't I? Yeah, you know it. Brother Usher Steve in New York, subject line, abusing chickens. Such manly people. Republicans in the making, obviously. Oh, hell yeah! I mean, it ain't like they're members of the Amalgamated Brotherhood of Chicken Kickers. No, Virginia's all right to work. Mm-hmm. Virginia's so right to work that back when he was governor of the old Dominion, that Tim Kaine publicly said he just loved him some right to work. Sorry. It's true. It's factual. The Democratic nominee for president actually praised right to work there in the Oldie Dominion. See, right to work makes sure that that low wages prevail at the Tyson plants, which sort of contributes to the chicken kicking. Brother Usher Steve also noting the era of big government. Steve says, I think it's more like the era of government is over. Well, it's the same thing. Because remember when Grover Norquist said he just wanted to make the government small enough to drown it in a bathtub? Well, there's going to be some chicken feathers floating in that bathtub, Brother Usher Steve. Tim from L.A., you have a filthy mind. Subject line, kicking chicken. So did Tyson end the practice of choking their chicken at the chicken ranch? You people. Well, that, okay, so, what was it Carol said the other night? Jesus Kincaid, you sure know how to throw a turd on the grill? Subject line, chickening out. Steve in China says, I'm waiting for the genetically engineered headless chickens myself. Just a bag of protein on the end of a feeding tube. In the meantime, there's always tofu. And, you know, you do it upright. Well, you know what the universal statement is. Tastes like chicken. And tastes like chicken is the universal standard because chicken don't taste like much. Chicken takes on the flavor of whatever you're... Right. So there's that. And, yeah, Ron and Raleigh saw right through my ruse. Hey, Bob, if you believe we'd be better off without meat, please tell me what we would do with all the meat animals. Will we be like India with cows wandering into our houses, reproducing willy-nilly? Talking about free-range everything. Well, yeah, or else they'd probably, like, go extinct or something because... once we turned them all loose to live their happy free-range lives, they would then become game animals for the likes of Ted Nugent to stalk and hunt and kill. J. Cruzan asking, do you remember the Clinton-Tyson Foods connection? Well, hell yeah. If it was Arkansas, the Clintons had a thumb in it. Sure. Same thing with Wally World. All the way back to 1994. Back in 1978, Hillary Rodham Clinton invested $1,000 in commodities futures, and the investment grew in 10 months of trading in the notoriously volatile market into a gain of nearly $100,000. I remember when the right wing had a plum hissy about that. Jay Cruzan sent me the New York Times story from March 30th, 1994. Kind of weird seeing 19 in front of something. The White House insisted today that Mrs. Clinton... Wait a minute. And Barbie's not even here, damn it. The White House insisted today that Mrs. Clinton received no improper financial assistance on the trades from the lawyer James B. Blair, a close friend who at the time was the top lawyer for Tyson Foods of Springdale, Arkansas, the nation's biggest poultry company. Mr. Blair has said that he had suggested that she get into the commodities market and that he used his knowledge of trading to guide her along the way. Yeah, so that. On the other hand, in news from the devil, interesting little something. Yesterday, the Drug Enforcement Administration said, hell no, we ain't rescheduling marijuana. It's good business for it to us, to us here at the DEA, to treat it the same as heroin. I mean, it's what we call here in the DEA job security. Yeah, because, you know, marijuana is still on cannabis, is still on Schedule 1. Alongside heroin and, you know, bath salts, which makes people eat other people's faces. But lo and behold, you get the idea that in the grand scheme of the no play that is that is the American presidential campaign season. Maybe there's a reason for what the DEA did, because lo and behold, ta-da! A woman named Maya Harris, who's a senior policy advisor to the Clinton campaign, said they were happy about the concurrent move made by the DEA to loosen restrictions on growing cannabis for research. She issued a statement and said, we applaud the steps taken today by the Obama administration to remove research barriers that have significantly limited the scientific study of marijuana. Marijuana has already been, you know, it's kind of where that word just looks stupid. It looks even stupider in the West Virginia code, where it's spelled M-A-R-I-H-U-A-N-A, because, well, when the hillbillies were writing that part of the West Virginia code back in 1931, they didn't know that whole J-H thing in the Spanish language thing. Marijuana is already being used for medical purposes in states across the country, and it has the potential for even further medical use, noted Ms. Harris. As Hillary Clinton has said throughout this campaign, we should make it easier to study marijuana so that we can better understand its potential benefits as well as side effects. As president, Hillary will build on the important steps announced today by rescheduling marijuana from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 2 substance. She will also ensure Colorado and other states that have enacted marijuana laws can continue to serve as laboratories of democracy. So, you know, there's that. But that doesn't change anything. She's still the devil. Right. Mm-hmm. When you smoke the demon marijuana, you can get the munchies. And that's largely what fuels the sale of snack foods across Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, in the universe, now, today, forever, amen, under God. But you can also get, depending on the strain which you're using, by the way, hi, Canon Hawaii, hi. You can also get what is referred to among the dope fiends as cottonmouth, you know, where it gets kind of all dry and sticky inside. Makes you kind of thirsty. Well, so, I mean, this just proves the dangers of marijuana. Because in various parts of the new United States of Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God, hallelujah, getting the cotton mouth and going for a big, cool glass of water can be hazardous to your health. Mm-hmm. Across the fruited plain, my friends, no, across the fruited plain, about 6 million Mercans have within their bodies, known or unknown, mostly unknown because they're not being tested because, well, you wouldn't want to scare them or anything. They've got elevated levels of poison. The article I'm looking at says toxic chemicals. No, no, no. Let's use the real word, friends. Poison, which are unregulated, but are widely present in household products. Unregulated toxic chemicals. Hey, why, look, there's that small government again. Yep. Yep, got to be fiscally conservative, small government, constitutional conservatives, because then, I mean, if you had a big old government, you could have people out there doing sciencey things to help keep people from having unregulated poison in their bodies, and then where'd your freedom be, huh? Right. Among other things, there are about 6 million Americans who have the makings of Teflon in their bodies. It's a fun word. It reminds me back of the time when we hillbillies had to learn a fun word. Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. Well, it looks like Merca needs to learn about perfluoroalkyl substances, or PFASs. See, you just use the initials after a while because you get real tired of saying methylfluorohexane methanol. And you just call it MCHM or MCHM, which is not to be confused with the stuff that you rub under your arms to keep from running people right off the bus. Teflon is not highly used in the new United States of Merca anymore. But your perfluoroalkyl substances never really got regulated because small government. The era of big government is over. Because we like us some small government. And since we had us some small government, well, we couldn't regulate perfluoroalkyl substances. See, I'm getting real good at saying that real quick. Us hillbillies have a talent for that. Your perfluoroalkyl substances went unregulated. And hey, guess what? The people who made the perfluoroalkyl substances, guess what they done did? They dumped it in watersheds. so as all of us could partake of it a little bit more freely and democratically.
Mm-hmm.
And when you dump your perfluoroalkyl substances into the watershed, it stays there. I mean, except for the fact that it gets into you. Let's see. According to the savagely underfunded Environmental Protection Administration, the EPA, the job-killing EPA, perfluoroalkyl substances do all kinds of nasty shit to animals and other humans and other animals. There, that's the way to say it. Humans and other animals. If you're somebody who has gotten yourself a nice loading dose of perfluoroalkyl substances because the 73rd decimal point of the share price of the chemical company would have gone down by, you know, one digit if it had been, you know, removed, well, maybe your babies are going to have some birth defects. Or maybe you get to have that conversation usually held in hushed tones with a physician where they say cancer. Or maybe your immune system just got all screwed up. Philip Grandjean is the co-author and adjunct professor of environmental health at Harvard. Think Progress interviewed him and he said, "These compounds have been used for over 60 years. And it is only in the most recent years that we've been able to begin to understand how serious this pollution is and how toxic PFASs are, perfluoroalkyl substances. Because capitalism. Because the precautionary principle, which would have kept all these poisons out of, you know, the bodies of the people who... in the name of God and liberty, sit, needed to absorb this stuff into their bodies. Well, that wouldn't have happened if we'd had the precautionary principle. And then where would the free market have been, friends and neighbors? Yeah, can't have that. So you know, we just let people make chemicals and do with them what they will, and then later on, if it turns out that, you know, little children have babies' arms growing out of their heads, or or just die, we'll put them through a long and tortured process of litigation, in which they may or may not get compensated because freedom. That study. Co-authored by Philippe Grandjean. Well, he's a Philippe, so he's probably Philippe Grandjean. That study that got published in Environmental Science and Technology Letters said that, get this, for a minute there you were thinking, well, you know, I mean, but it ain't me. You know, NIMBY, not in my backyard, sugar. 75% of the public water systems that exceeded perfluoroalkyl substance recommended safety levels, well, those 75% of those public water systems were in Alabama-stan, Arizona-stan, California-Florida-stan, Georgia-stan, Illinois, Minnesota, Massachusetts, New Jersey, North Carolina-stan, New York, Ohio-stan, and Pennsylvania. They didn't even bother to measure West Virginia. I mean, fuck, you probably couldn't find the PFASs in there for all the Mitchum and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. I mean, looking for poisons in West Virginia water is like looking for a needle in a needle stack. Yeah, you get the idea. And see, we got a little bit of that big government going on. Because back in 2013, the job-killing EPA, they started a new program, which is just pure communism. where the EPA said every public water system that serves at least 10,000 people has to test for unregulated freedom contaminants. Yeah. And lo and behold, that's how you find out that there's several million people here in the United States of America, the greatest country in the history of the world, in the earth, on the universe, now, forever. Amen. Praise Jesus. That's how they found out that there's all them people got all them poisons in them. Yeah. I mean, there's manufacturing sites, there's military sites, airports. They use perfluoroalkyl substances for fire suppression. Wastewater treatment plants with municipal water systems, watersheds, population centers. And then they put it all into some Facebook algorithms. No, just algorithms. And they figured out how often and how much of this poisonous crap is in the public water supply. And they come up with them 6 million people at risk of contamination. I added 2 and 2 together and added 12 and carried 5 and come up with 22,000 telephone poles an hour. Dr. Philippe Grandjean said, this is not a short-term problem, and exactly for this reason we ought to do something about it as soon as possible. Gentlemen, we have got to protect our phony baloney jobs. Harumph! But for all of this site, all of this stuff, guess what? Yeah. There is, for all of that stuff, there's about 9 gajillion K Street lobbyists out there writing checks as quick as their crooked little hands can write them to make sure that the industry, in protection of that 103rd decimal place on the share price, gets to keep on poisoning Merkins. Because profit, because money, because freedom. Damn Skippy. So I mentioned that there was $119.50 to go in meeting Chris's challenge from the Northwest Territories. We'll call it the Yellowknife Challenge. Ooh, I like that. And courtesy of Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus. Cletus is a good girl. She's such a sweet little puppy. Went out and found her milk bone money. We're now down to $99.50 to meet the challenge and get us a big chunk of the way towards meeting the evening's fundraising goal and finishing off in good stead. You know, finishing off the week, that is. So, it's out there. It's out there. Oh, what else? A lot. I mentioned something yesterday, and I just want to take a moment to address this, because let there be no doubt, I support organized labor because I support good-paying jobs, because I support families that can feed themselves, because I support the idea of health care and meaningful retirements that don't leave the elderly suffering in their golden years. I support all these things. I also, however, support the idea that education of the rank and file is both helpful and necessary. And toward that end, I realize that talking about photographs or videos on the radio is like dancing about architecture. But regardless, I gotta mention this. So I had the story yesterday about the victory of working people in this state, almost level West by Coal, Virginia, Stan, against the nasty, noxious right-to-work law that was passed by our teabagging legislature back in the early 2016 in that session of the legislature. And they gathered a couple of days ago outside the courthouse for the hearing, and some one or another labor organizations had printed up some signs, and it was a highly appropriate sign: "Stop the war on working families." There are a lot of these in the Sam Owens photo from the Gazette Mail. There are several of these signs there: "Stop the war on working families." A couple other folks, however, decided to make their own, and I'm all for that. There is a slogan that is that has taken root and is growing in this state. Oh, where's Brother Deacon Gerald of the Cathedral of Common Sense Building and Grounds Committee when I need him? A couple of homemade signs that say, "We will remember in November." The West Virginia AFL-CIO has printed up a bunch of bumper stickers that say this, and I proudly display one on our vehicle. "Remember in November" means get rid of dipshits, teabagging dipshits, like Thomas Fast, who goes on the television and says that that there Obama makes secret Muslim hand signs when nobody's watching, because he's a Kenyan secret Muslim, you slurper. Remember in November. And I almost feel bad about this, because I don't want to come across as, you know, a dick. Because I don't mean people suck.
You dick!
I'm trying not to be. But we got to Stop the War on Working Families signs. We've got the handmade signs. We will remember in November. I'm right there with you. But over to one edge is a white guy, and being as how it's almost level West by Coal, Virginia, Stan, it's almost a 110 million bajillion percent likelihood that it would be a white guy. And he's holding up his homemade sign. This moment of the horn brought to you by the Department of, well, fuck me running. His homemade sign says, and I am quoting here, "WV workers, lives matters." Yeah. WV workers and matters are done in black Sharpie. Lives, capital L, little I, little V, little E, little S, is done in red Sharpie on a naturally white piece of poster board. Now, we will, for the moment, dispense with the whole question of education in West Virginia and the whole idea, as a practitioner, a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, that there's a thing called subject-verb agreement, wherein one would either say WV workers' lives matter or WV worker lives matters. No. Workers matter. Yeah, WV workers' lives matter or WV workers' life. You get the idea. But I'm going to blow past that and suggest that, well, okay, first of all, organized labor in West Virginia has a problem. The people who make the real money, the real, you know, Mr. Clampett walking around money at the top end of the structure. Well, I know personally that they have said in the past they don't give a good goddamn what happens to the poor in this state. They only care about the working people they represent. This strikes me as being contrary to any sort of intelligent theory of functioning civil society. Because where's your membership going to come from? Well, it's going to come up from the bottom, because very seldom does young John Paul Gottrocks the 15th decide that he wants to go and become a member of the Sheetrock Hangers Amalgamated Brotherhood. But moreover, co-opting the operating principle of a group of people aggrieved by the near wholesale slaughter of people of color by law enforcement in this country, and implying by means of one's homemade sign that having one's wages attacked by Republicans, which, while nefarious, odious, and disgusting, implying that that is the same as being gunned down and having one's body left in the middle of the road in the August heat like some sort of rabid dog, well, the comparison just doesn't work. And I looked at this photo, and I was reminded that this is, in fact, by at least one metric, the most racist state in the Union. And I was reminded how in 2014, this state was festooned with signs manifesting anti-Barack Obama rhetoric that one did not even have to scratch in order to smell the fecal odor of racism coming off of them. This is probably a perfectly nice guy. You'd like to have a beer with him. And you'd probably be in some pretty deep shit if you said to him, "Bub, making light of black folks getting slaughtered in the streets by police by co-opting their phrase is neither respectful nor helpful." WV workers' lives matters. So I just, as they say in the evangelical fundamentalist amosexual churches, I felt a burden upon my heart to get that out there. The lives of West Virginia workers do matter. And you can, in fact, say that Appalachian workers have been treated like shit over the last 125, 130, 150 years. Blasted, burnt, poisoned, choked, smashed, electrocuted, drowned, you know, generally killed. And usually, and quite often in wholesale numbers. But that's not the point of this man's sign. The point of this man's sign is that the Republicans are attacking his wages. And maybe the better way to put that would have been to say WV workers' wages matter. And you know what? The teabagging legislature, if they could make it legal to watch this space, they may do it. If they could re-legalize the Baldwin thugs to go in and teach working people in this state their place, well, hell, they might damn well do it. But they're not quite that stupid, our teabagger legislature. And so they're far more likely to simply keep talking about how they love Jeebus and how everybody needs a nice cup of bacterially soupy raw milk and a gun to carry in their pocket. And cutting those wages and killing those unions than actually getting all heavy-handed and ham-fisted about things and just going out and blowing a few of them away, because the last time they did that, the working people finally, after about 20 years, got a little bit uppity. And, of course, they started shooting back, and they got crushed like a bug. So, you know, this is just kind of about messaging. Ideas. Then again, messaging's not necessarily our strong suit, is it? So, hey, it's 7 minutes past the hour. I have over-filibobstered. And with that in mind, we should probably take a little break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Must be some pollen floating around. Just the same. We will. We'll take a little break. And a reminder, if you've never participated in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, I highly encourage you so to do. All you have to do to get in on it is, on Skype, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. It's all one word. And he'll send you he'll show you the Bob signal in the sky against the clouds and point out the breadcrumb trail to you. And before you know it, you will be part of those rarest forms of conversation taking place in radio, the horns ordinary round table of everyday people who manage to carry capitalism on their backs, rain or shine, cold or warm, night or day. Right. All right. So we've got $99.50 to go on Chris's Yellowknife Challenge. And a little bit more than that to go just to finish the evening to the good. This is Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. That's right, Steve from Georgia Stan, from Uprising, Bob Marley, and Work. Friday on the Front Porch, on the Horn, I'm Bob Kincaid, joined almost instantaneously by the one and only longtime inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator and moderator of the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. First off, I have to tell Steve and Georgia Stan, you're... update you did or something messed up your Skype, and I can't add you.
Okay, I just typed something similar to that effect in the chat room, too. I try to help.
Okay. Other than that, I just wanted to tell you some news I had. I'm out of the shot, you know, you ever get a shot out of the blue?
Yeah.
Last weekend, it's Sunday afternoon, all of a sudden... on my Facebook, I get a request, so I click on it, and it's my old roommate from when I was stationed at Beale Air Force Base working on the SS-71.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen or heard of the guy in 38 years.
Amazing.
So we made a quick contact on Facebook. I found out he lives in Texas and worked for Chevron for 30 years. And guess where he's doing consulting work right now?
Do tell.
Saudi Arabia.
Oy, poor guy. I'm sure he's well paid, but still.
So I know another person over in the sandbox.
Oh, we've got multiple members of the Horn family community congregation in the sandbox. Hi, Peg. So yeah, and by the way, Ron is winging his way back, even as we speak. He got on a plane there in the UAE, long about midnight that local time, which would be about 2 hours and 15 minutes ago. No, yeah. Something like 3 hours and 50, something like that.
And plus, everybody knows when you talk union stuff, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And
I'm one of those people living the retiree life on a good pension.
Damn straight. And you know, the goal of the teabagging legislature here in West Virginia was to, you know, make that disappear. Via right to work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just... And the sad thing is, I'm probably the only person who noticed that or who drew the line, the connected the two dots, because the hoity-toities and mucky-mucks in West Virginia don't give a tinker's damn. They're also the same high and mighties and hoity-toities who said, oh, well, we can work with our new teabagging legislature and we can come to a compromise that will be satisfying to both sides. You know, meanwhile, the teabaggers are over there with their whetstones and their knives going, yeah, we can. Sure we can. It's kind of amazing. Wait, I think I lost him. Okay, I lost you there for a minute, I think.
That was my screw up. I was trying to get Steve in the group. Steve, can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay, good deal.
Hi.
Hey, Alex.
Hi, everybody.
Are you making any of those beetroot margaritas there in the Arizona heat?
I am drinking.
Yes, I am here.
As I'm sitting here, I'm drinking something called a godmother. And what it is a very high quality amaretto with vodka on the rocks.
That's nice. That's
I
nice.
I deserve it.
You damn well do.
And you know what? Two things to report. One, it's weather related. There's something that I learned when I moved to Arizona, Stan. It's a weather pattern called a haboob.
Oh, are you having a haboob?
We are having a haboob. We had a haboob the other day, and it's spectacular, and it's just beautiful. The sky, you see a giant, it's a robin eggs color sky with this huge cloud that's all gray, and it rains in certain parts, and then it gets sunny, and then the haboob is like a windstorm, and it just comes down with driving giant fat rain droplets and incredible wind, and it comes down in torrents, and then it has, and it's great. I love it. It's because it's warm, and then the sun shines after that, and it has a funny name called haboob.
Well, no, Alex, it is not a funny name. It's one of them terrorist names because it comes from the Arabic.
It's a usurper name.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of them terrorist words from the Arabic, like alcohol and algebra.
How about abacus?
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Obama. But all kidding aside, every time a if you go looking around on social media out there in Arizona, Stan, every time a Haboob gets predicted, the right wingers move into an absolutely just unbearable frenzy.
Yeah.
Why can't it just be an American sandstorm? Why we gotta call it some Sharia law name?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen that shit.
Well, today, as you know, I work at the VA, and I work with veterans. So I don't divulge, of course, my political feelings or my, you know, the fact I'm a left-wing progressive atheist. You know, that's, you know, unspoken. But there are times when things come up, and so I kind of goad them a little bit to, like, divulge a little bit of information there without making it seem, you know, I never let them know what side I'm on. I kind of act neutral. So, of course, another vet today.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so upset about what's going on, and I'm angry. Oh, what are you angry about, I say in my therapeutic manner. Why are you feeling so angry? Well, it's... the Clintons and the left wing and the blah 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 and today some young guy wants Trump, and I said, well, why do you like Trump? Well, he wants to make things the way it was before. And then he said he is coming from a good place. He tells it like it is. And I said, well, what do you think about what he said about that Gold Star family? And he gave an excuse for Trump. He said, well, you know, he's a little rough around the edges. So here is a veteran, Iraq, two tours in Iraq. He's upset. He has PTSD. And he is angry and wants Trump for president because...
Don't forget, he's also dumber than a freaking post.
They're all dumber than a freaking post. Are you kidding? Please. Good grief. And then I have to go home and see reelect McCain signs on the way home. Now you know why I'm drinking, people.
You're drinking people? I thought you were drinking godmothers.
Well, they're people too, aren't they?
Godmothers is people too.
Tequila.
And I'm so glad I'm here with you guys because I need you all.
So Alex, you think McCain is going to get... Has he had his primary yet or not?
Well, there's a Democratic woman, I forgot her name, running against McCain. But, you know, I don't have it. I'm very cynical.
So you think he's going to win his seat?
Yeah, Kilpatrick.
They have Arpaio. Reelect Arpaio signs here.
Oh, God.
You know, good grief. Every time I pass it, I put my arm out like it's a gun and go, you know, as I drive by.
Well, you got to do something to stay sane, right?
You think?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
So anyway, that's my story. My Haboob and misguided poor veterans. And I'm just like, yike. I'm glad. Here I is. Oh, and I am a member of the Iraqi Veterans Against the War.
Good.
If you ever check, you got to check them out. They're wonderful people.
Oh, without a doubt.
Non-veterans join?
You don't join to become a member. I mean, I'm not a member. I'm a donator. But any veteran can join after the 9/11 to become a member of Iraqi Veterans Against the War, but you could become a donator, you know, donate and be a supporter. They're wonderful people, and they were out at the Philly demonstration, and they're progressive. You should hear them. I mean, they're fantastic, you know, telling it like it is. Just, you know, incredible people.
Like that T-Rump telling it like it is, right?
No, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Billable Rick, what's happening?
Well, you know, I loved your thing about West Virginia Lives Matters.
WV Workers Lives Matters.
Okay. So, being the attorney that I am, the way that I would conjugate that phrase is it deals with the legal matters of West Virginia workers. You know, their matters. as opposed to their lives mattering, like their legal.
Yeah, but at that point in time, it's a sentence fragment and doesn't have a verb.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, there's nothing like those homemade signs, you know. I mean, they just God love them, right? I guess if God doesn't love them, nobody else will, right?
Well, I mean, but the guy's heart's in the right place. He just needs someone to gently explain it to him.
Right. Right. Exactly. Well, not too much exciting here on the West Coast. We're having a temperate summer for the most part. I know Sparky would disagree, but he's up there in the high desert.
Yeah, so I have like 118, 110 degrees for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting the heat wave coming up pretty soon, I think.
Well, yeah, you're on the west. You're in California. My husband just drove to Portland, Oregon area, and it's like 95 degrees and like 80% humidity. So they're suffering over there.
Oh, geez, that's horrible. We're like, it hasn't even gotten up to. It hasn't gotten past like 85 the last couple of weeks or so. So it's been very temperate. I haven't had to turn the air conditioning on.
Wow.
You know, maybe I did for briefly, but not for very long, you know. So it's been really good. And then I'll tell you, I saw a hell of a concert on Saturday night.
Oh, here we go. What concert did you see?
Outdoor concert in L.A., Kansas.
Kansas? You like all those 80s groups, huh?
Those guys still rock, and the vocalists sound just
They're awesome. They are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was all Patch there?
What's that?
Was Patch there? The dude with the eye patch?
Patch? I'm not sure. Oh, yes. Yeah, the guy with the eye patch. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was there.
Oh, man. He just rocked. I seen him 2 or 3 years ago, and I seen him with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, and they just brought the house down. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, and these guys, like, you know, afterwards, they, like, you know, after they did their encore, they came out and said, oh, I hope you liked us. Hope we did well. It's like, of course you did.
You know what I saw, Rick? My last concert, I saw, actually, when I lived in Oregon, I actually saw Jethro Tull's 40th anniversary of Aqualung tour. And they played the whole album of Aqualung.
Cool.
But the thing is, poor Ian Anderson, you know, he was jumping up and down with his flute, you know, doing you know, his little calisthenics with the flute that he's famous for, but his voice was completely shot. I felt I mean, I'm not, no hyperbole here, as we us New York famous for.
Yeah.
His voice was completely shot. It was so sad. But then that same summer, a couple of summers later, like 2 years ago, I saw John Fogerty. And he rocked.
Yeah, I saw him last summer. He still sounds really good.
And that thing with his checkered shirt, and he brings his kids, you know, they all wear those shirts, and you know, he dyes his hair a little bit and stuff. But he rocks.
Yeah, well, you know, it I guess it depends on the rocker. Like Dennis DeYoung's voice was okay. You know, I saw him. Mm-hmm. And then I saw Boston. I mean, Boston's lead singer, Tom Schultz or whatever, he still's got a great voice. Van Morrison has lost it a little bit, but you know, you still see, you know, Shades of Brilliance. You still hear Shades of Brilliance. The guys from Kansas, I mean, just, you know, it sounds like they haven't lost it at all. And maybe part of it is just genetics, you know, that's part of it. And maybe the other part of it is healthy living, like maybe not getting burned out and so forth.
Well, you know, Ian Anderson, you know, he's about 68 now, but he was about 65 or 66. Just think of his voice. I mean, singing like that all those years, you know, how he sings, you know, the way he sings. I think his voice was almost completely gone.
Wow. Yeah, so they opened up with A Point of No Return, which was really cool. And then they closed with a version of, they dedicated the first song to the firefighters. It had to do something with fire, I think is the name of it. I can't remember how it goes, but I recognized it. It was like a minor hit, like probably in the 80s. And then Carry On My Wayward Son was the very last song. So just tremendous. And their violinist is just superb. What amazes me about Kansas is how they can, how they switch keys in the middle of musical theme in a song. You know, they kind of do. I don't know what you call that exactly, but they just kind of like they jump to a different key. You know, that's sort of their signature, and you know it really works for them.
You know what I think of when I think of Kansas now?
Yeah.
I think of that scene in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure where Bill and Ted travel back to ancient Athens and they meet Socrates.
Oh.
And one of them picks up some sand and says, "Dude, all we are is dust in the wind." and Socrates yells, "Eureka!" And they all get back, and they all get back in the phone booth and go to the and go into the future.
That's great.
Did you ever see the movie Red State? Kevin Smith, Red State.
Oh yeah.
Unbelievable, huh?
That's a word for it. Yep.
So of course the Kansas of course did Dust in the Wind. I mean they did all their you know really good songs and a few songs I hadn't really heard. And I guess. The only complaint I have about the show is that there were probably 5,000 people at the show. They did not allow any food or drink in, and you had like three food trucks to choose from. 5,000 people, and it took forever to get you know beers and stuff like that. So that's my only complaint. So I think the next concert I go to, which is going to be Mickey Thomas and the Starship.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they're going to be Saturday night.
Minus Ms. Slick.
That's the best part about it. I'll probably get some in and out beforehand.
I was too young to see Airplane. I was just a few years too young to catch Airplane, but
yeah.
I did see Jefferson Starship, as we call them, because, you know, we're just a bunch of nuts.
Yeah.
Jefferson Starship, 1974 at Radio City Music Hall. They, you know, I saw them with Craig Chiquico and Marty Balin and, you know, all of them. So I saw Jefferson Starship in 1974, and they played Ride the Tiger and all that stuff. But, it was interesting, that concert.
Yeah, so I'm looking
forward to that. That's all pre We Built This City on Crappy Songs.
Oh, I hated that song. Good grief.
Oh, jeez. That was a big hit for them. But anyway, interestingly, this is the one concert last summer that
got
rained
out. Are you knocking the San Francisco rock scene?
No,
I'm knocking that crappy song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, Mickey Thomas and Starship were to have played like last summer at about the same time, but it got rained out. It was actually, and the Angels had a home game, and they got rained out as well. It was like the first rain out in like 40 years. So it was really pretty weird, you know. It wasn't a heavy rain, but it was enough to mess things up. And so they're going to get to play. And unfortunately, I didn't get to hear the first band last weekend. I know the one that I think Jen likes. I forget the name of it. Some weird name like, what the hell was it called? It had to do with something with Hunter. What was it called? I forget what it's called, but I was waiting in the damn food line to get my food pretty much for like 40 minutes while they were playing of their set.
I don't go to those big concert venues anymore. I'm too old. I'm too tired. I've done that. You know, I just don't have the energy to like deal with that anymore. You know?
Well, you know, I just.
The tickets are so expensive.
I know. Well, what I did is I took my geezer hat off and decided to act younger than I am. So that's what I did to go there.
You're not a geezer yet.
Yeah, I know I'm not.
Am I older than you, Rick? Probably.
You got me by about 5 years, I believe. I'm 53.
Oh, Jesus, more than that. 5, 6. Yeah, 5 years. You're right. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know what the best thing about being my age is? Every Tuesday at Goodwill, it's 25% off.
Awesome. Awesome. That rocks.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think once you hit 55, you get the senior citizen discounts, don't you?
Some places do. Yeah.
Hey, I'm already getting it. I'm already getting it at the Wiggling Pig, and I don't push back.
Oh. Yeah.
10% on Tuesdays, baby.
Cool.
Hey, If you're over 50 and you don't have an ARP card, you're crazy.
Oh, seriously?
I don't want an ARP
yeah,
card.
Seriously. I mean, just for prescriptions alone, if you get a Catamaran card, which comes with the ARP card, it's $20 a month. One prescription can save you $80, $90.
Well, I don't, you mean when you turn 65 or 66 or something?
No. Once you're 50. Past 50, you're eligible for an ARP card. And they have a subsidiary called Catamaran that will give you a prescription card that will pick up anything that your primary insurance will not cover.
Oh, such as,
yeah, such as, you know, injectables or vitamins or there's a lot of things that your primary won't cover, but Catamaran covers anything that is FDA approved.
Oh, good grief.
Is it free, Steve, or you pay a fee for each year for it?
It's $20 a month. I mean, comes with the ARP membership.
Okay.
And it pays for itself the first time around. And I don't mean to sound like I'm doing a commercial for AARP. I'm certainly not. You know,
well, we have to help each other. You know,
You don't have to worry, Steve. I'm getting a Medicare supplemental serum next week.
But
my wife's already on it. Just call that.
So I get testosterone injectables and B complex injectables, and you would not believe the money that it saves me every month. You know,
I wonder what would happen to me if I got testosterone injections.
it probably wouldn't end. It wouldn't end well. You know,
it would probably help, Alex. You never know.
We're putting somebody a lot younger to sleep, Jason.
Yeah, that's what I saw. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, let's change the subject.
Well, you know, Steve, let me just say one more thing about the ARP thing. I mean, I'm not a member, and I'm sort of philosophically opposed to aging, but I'm not opposed to getting a discount, so maybe I'll just go for it.
If you ever need something that your insurance doesn't cover, brother, it will pay for it in the first refill, sincerely. Okay.
Well, it sounds like a plan. So anyway, we'll stop the geezer talk. What's up, Jason?
Hey, sleepy millennial or whatever you want to call yourself.
Sounds like you just took a bong hit.
You guys are still here? I thought it was past 9 o'clock. I'm sorry.
It is past 9 o'clock.
You thought it was a bad dream or a bad bad auditory hallucination?
Do you guys feel the way I do about this whole, like, here we are now, after all that's been going on for years and years, and this whole election situation, and all of the stuff that's come out, and here I am sitting here going, I am so thoroughly exhausted mentally and physically from all this stuff that I have no hope for the future, and I'm really tired, and I'm really pissed off.
Count me in on that.
But what is your name, lady that's talking?
That's Alex.
Hey, Miss Alex, I'm Steve. It's nice to meet you.
Steve, hi.
Hi. I feel like I'm living in bizarro world. I mean, let's just rewind what happened last week. Hillary's handlers, they handed Trump a gift when they seated the Florida shooter's father right behind her. And then the next day, Trump commented on it, and he said she knew, she had to know. I know everyone who's sitting behind me. And then he turns around and he says, anyone back here that knows me, please raise their hand. Well, lo and behold, who raises their hand but none
Mark
other than
Foley.
Mark freaking Foley.
Pedophile.
He had to have known that Foley was back there. And I was scratching my head for hours wondering why he did that. Is it a red flag operation? No, I don't think so. Dan Rather said the only explanation that made any sense to me,
you know,
Trump's
what it is.
Handlers did that on purpose to divert the statement that Trump made, the dog whistling statement that he made. If you don't like Hillary being electric or the judgment, we have a lot of Second Amendment supporters here. That's the only thing that makes any sense to me, and I'd like you guys to weigh in on that.
One of the benefits of all of this is that it's making certain Republicans lose what's left of their tiny little minds.
Not just the Republicans, but the Democrats too, Bob. Come on, man. This is the
Hey, Jason, I hadn't finished. Jason, I hadn't finished, okay? Anyway, this is good fun. I think by November we may actually get to witness Karl Rove's head explode on live television. Check this out.
On the RNC chief's behalf, but what about every day we're greeted with news of more and more Republicans distancing themselves from Donald Trump, and then this actually asking that money be diverted from his campaign?
Yeah, look, I think Trump is better advised to ignore these and keep going. I mean, last week, 50 foreign policy, Republican foreign policy experts issued a letter denouncing him, and he spent a day talking about it. The letter from 70 came yesterday, and rather than leaving it in the hands of the Republican National Chairman to say, of course, we're not going to do that, instead, Donald Trump spent one of 89 days he has left issuing a reply to it. That would be time that would be better spent going after Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, or laying out his own vision. So he feels this need to counterpunch onto everything. He ought to resist it. Sometimes those counterpunches are better left in the hands of others, and he ought to keep his focus on the main target. He will not win this race by devoting more than 1% of his available time left to responding to a letter from 70 people. He needs to spend each one of those very precious 88 days left going after the principal targets in this race.
But these aren't 70 people or 50 people. I mean, these are people that's supposed to be on his team. And he's going around the country. He's raising the money. They pulled in $80 million last month. I mean, what is the deal, you know, with this whole idea that they must come out publicly, and now you don't want them to say anything? I get that. Maybe it's a waste of time from your perspective, but I can tell you, the New Yorker and me, the first knee-jerk reaction is to punch back.
Yeah, well, you know what? If he does that between now and the election, what do you think is going to happen? The Clinton campaign is going to provoke him every day to stay off of message, and he's going to fall for all of these things and waste valuable time. Does he want to win, or does he want to respond? If he wants to be the New Yorker and punch back on everybody who comes his way, fine. That's an open invitation for everybody to come his way with things like this and get him off stride and off message. I repeat, if you think this is a winning strategy, then by God, by all means, he ought to keep doing it. But if he's going to win, my view is he's going to win only if he goes after Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and lays out his own vision. And look, you got plenty of, you can always raise more money. You can always create more issues. But the one thing in a presidential campaign that you can never create more of is time. And he has 88 days to make his case. He has squandered the last 3 weeks by responding to the Gold Star Mother. The day after he had his presidential nomination, they became the official nominee of the Republican Party. The first news conference he has is not devoted to laying out a case against Hillary Clinton or bashing Barack Obama or laying out what he wants to do as president. It is renewing and revisiting all of the things that he said about Ted Cruz, who was yesterday's news at that point. And why? Because he just felt compelled to do it.
You know, it's hard not to watch that and say, stroke, 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 stroke. Because, I mean, he's right. The wealthy orange dipshit. It's easy. It's easy. He's probably sitting somewhere seething right now because a heckler in the crowd, I think earlier today, screamed at him so that everybody could hear, "You're Putin's bitch."
Come on, man. The same thing's going on the Democratic side.
You're not going to try to play the both sides do it card, are you, Jay Cruzen?
The equivalency thing doesn't work, bro. It doesn't. It ain't equivalency. All due respect, it doesn't work.
It's all honesty. You can look at both candidates. They both have negative approval ratings that are so fucking far low that's never been seen in the history of politics. The whole goddamn thing is a sham. The people who really hold the levers of power are pulling the fucking levers, and you're left with these two bullshit candidates that neither one of them is really wanted to be president by either fucking side. And all we're going to get is another 8 years of bullshit. No, Hillary Clinton is going to be elected. She's going to beat Donald Trump. Donald Trump's just going to fucking flop out of this thing. And all we're going to get is another 8 years of bullshit, which is exactly what the people who hold the levers of power want.
There will be no revolution because most of the people in this country are brain dead, don't give a shit, or racist assholes. There's only a point.
It doesn't have anything to do with what the people in this country want.
Well, yeah.
What it has to do with is the people in this country who hold the levers of power, hold them. They are going to keep them, and they are not going to relinquish them to any of us.
Why do they hold the levers of power?
Were you under the impression that they?
No, it's not because we not allow them to. It's because we're so manipulated that there's not enough of the population to change it.
We just don't have enough people out there with enough sense to vote for a woman who says that Wi-Fi is bad for children's brains.
No, I'm not talking about Jill Stein. I wouldn't vote for Jill Stein if my cock was on fire and the only way to put it out was for...
Jesus.
I know, that's disgusting. I'm sorry about that. But I'm serious, though. There's no way. And I agree with the no Jill Stein, the no Green Party, the no Libertarian Party stuff. I'm going to vote down ballot. But I'm telling you, this is what we're given because this is what the people who hold the levers of power are giving us, and that is it.
Well, Jay Cruzen, it sounds like you're finally coming around to my long-held theory that this is an empire and empires behaved in the fashion of empires.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've only been saying that for about eight years.
Yeah. I've never disagreed with that.
So what do we do now, Bob? What do we do now? What?
Well,
how do we change?
I've actually been thinking about that for quite a bit. And if you'll bear with me for a minute, I think I can lay out some of it. You know, when little J. Paul Gottrocks XVI is laying in his cradle, and his daddy J. Paul Gottrocks XIV is placing in his hand his little solid gold 24-carat rattle, and the rattles are made of the bones of working people. And little J. Paul Gottrocks XV is shaking his little rattle, going, hey, big, hey, big, hey, big, hey. J. Paul Gottrocks XIV is leaning down over the cradle saying, son, you're part of the ruling class, and there are things that I must teach you as I pass the baton to you, for you shall be the ruling class when I am gone. And you shall have all the money and all the privilege necessary and all the learning, and you shall be educated at the institutions that are designed specifically to educate the ruling class. They have that. There is trans...
Why they want to get rid of the inheritance tax.
There is the wealth class in this country very effectively transmits transgenerational wisdom. Our side doesn't. We constantly have to reinvent the wheel. So, you know, maybe a little redneck boy from Alabama lucks into by the hard work of his parents a half decent education. And gets to read things like Marx and Hegel, and a little bit of literature, and learns a little bit about art and history. Well, that's nothing that his parents ever knew. Somebody else had to transmit that to him. And so, in terms of what do we do, Alex, there's not going to be any pitchforks and torches. I've been saying for years now that there will be no revolution so long as the cable stays on.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, that does not mean we have to be resigned to the fact that it ain't going to happen while we're alive. Dr. King said, I may not get to go across Jordan with you, but I have seen the promised land. You know, echoing Moses.
And now we can say today we have seen the promised land echo Bernie Sanders.
And so, and so what we have to do, we have to do a better job transmitting wisdom, working class wisdom, from one generation to the next. It's got to be directly transmitted parent to child. You can't just leave it up to happenstance and hope the kid wanders across something meaningful somewhere in the course of a struggling adolescence and young adulthood, because there's too much out there competing for her attention, especially in the wired world in which we live.
Yeah. I mean, look at me. My daughter, she's 35, okay? She doesn't vote. Not, you know, she's not, she goes around like a lot of her people in her 20s to 30s. They flit around doing this cafeteria style, you know, the Burning Man and doing dubstep DJing and Mother Earth and going to festivals and, you know, try, and being entrepreneurs and coaches to help people make money. And I mean, they don't do anything to help anybody. It's like this whole population of people, white middle class or, work, you know, upper middle class, not my daughter, but there's thousands and thousands of them. And they just walk around dancing and paying hundreds of dollars to go to these festivals. And they're just into their own, you know, and I'm her mother, for God's sake. I mean, it's like, how do we, I don't think it's so easy to pass down to make more of me and replicate.
No, it's not easy. It's hard, Alex, and that's why we have to be serious about it. I mean,
absolutely.
Consider what is referred to in the African American community as the talk. Everybody knows what the talk is now. That is direct wisdom passed from generation to generation. Well, and it's a prime example of what I'm talking about. Social cultural wisdom. There needs to be a talk for the working class. Okay, now in the chat room, Labor Man said, you get elected, period. And that's, you know, but that's part of it. And that's the part, Jay Cruzan, that Bernie was talking about. Getting more people into the process. Because, see, what happens is, as progressives, we all wait till November and we say, well, this is a shitty little binary we've got here. Well, that's not the election that matters. The election that matters are the primaries. When you choose the candidate that will appear on the ballot in November.
Well, it's not even that. It's getting a candidate on the ballot in the primary is what's the problem.
Well, I mean, somebody
get a progressive on the damn ballot in the first place.
Well, somebody's got to be willing to run.
We got to find people. I mean, there's got to be some structure that we have to create that has to find people.
Well, I mean, that, you know, progressive Democrats of America, outfits like that, are trying to do exactly that.
They're trying.
Yeah, and I give them money, too, by the way.
But, yeah, you're right. And you know what? Here, let's add another piece to this puzzle. We've got to encourage the growth of progressive politics in the belly of the beast. Okay? I mean, you know why they have Republican legislatures in Alabama and Mississippi, Stan? Because they can't field viable candidates on the other side.
That's exactly right. And that's what the that is where the Democratic Party has failed the United States of America.
It's religion and racism.
The Democratic Party has completely failed the United States of America in that aspect, because they will not invest, they will not try to find people, and they just they focus on is the top. And like just like I was listening to your program the other night, Bob, about how they've been doing it for 64 years, your entire life. The Republican Party has been doing it for 64 years, and they have created
53, all, to be. Yeah.
Okay, well, 64 years, which encompasses your entire existence, is exactly what you said. I know you're not.
No, I said since 1964.
Oh, there you go. Okay, which encompasses? Okay, there you go. Oh, okay.
Since the thumping of Bernie, anyway. Since the thumping of Barry Goldwater.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, they've been doing that all this freaking time, and they have all these state legislatures, all these governors, and even if we elect Hillary Clinton in 2020, when the next census rolls around. We have to have state legislatures. We don't need the Congress. We don't need the Senate. We need state legislatures to redistrict the fucking fucking.
Well, you know, it would also be okay. So, you know what else would be nice, Jay Crazen?
To fix it. To fix.
Okay, in order to fix it, you know what else would be nice?
Actually.
A Supreme Court with a viable majority who can go back and revisit these dumbass voting rights decisions issued by Roberts.
Well, we may get that.
You may.
Get that with Hillary.
Because I mean that happens at the stroke of the stroke of a pen.
I'm not voting for her. She's going to be elected, so we get that anyway. But I'm telling you, I mean, I'm serious. We're only going to get a little bit, Bob. We're only just going to get little tiny pieces. And it's not going to be enough to save.
Sometimes
humanity.
You take what is given, and that must be enough.
But it's not enough, especially with climate change. It is not enough anymore to just take the little tiny pieces. We cannot.
Yeah, but Jay Crazen, and I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable. But do you realize what you're asking this country to do? You're asking this country to act on things that the vast majority of people A, either don't believe in or don't understand. And see, because of the way that climate change works, I mean, I live 20 miles from a place that was 8 feet underwater and had never been that way in 1,000 years. If I go there and I go door to door and I say, we've got to do something about climate change and you just live through the proof of it, I probably won't make it 10 doors before I get a gun in my face.
Mm-hmm. See, that's,
if you, if, that's, you know, if you, the only.
That's what I'm saying. It's never going to happen because the people who really own the discussion are the ones with the levers of power who own the media. They own the big corporations. They own the fossil fuels. They own this and they own that. They own fucking everything. They own Wall Street. They own it all. And they're not going to give it up because they have the money. They can keep it forever.
Well, let me run over to the stress line for a minute here because I suspect we're going to have a concurring opinion. Out of PA. Is that you, Randy?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Randy.
I would say that you have to maintain an alternative media which the young will gravitate to because the media throw that as a strike, the mainstream media. And it's influencing the elections.
How do you define that alternative media, Randy?
Well, I support it heavily.
No, but how do you define it? How do you define it?
Well, you got to keep the avenues open, like you got to keep the internet avenues open so it doesn't get shut down and censored. And just the alternative media in general so that people have a choice. And I think the young are gravitating to that. So net neutrality is important at the moment. So
I agree. I'm not sure of your age. I know mine. I know the age of most of the folks in the group here. How do you create an alternative media that transmits this transgenerational wisdom to the younger listener/viewership? You've got to figure out what they want, what they care about, and you've got to speak in a language that they understand.
Well, not necessarily transgenerational, but you push back against Fox News and you push back against what's on the mainstream media that people get through just a lazy boy clicking through their remotes on their mainstream TV. I was suggesting that Apple come out with assigned channel numbers to iTunes, have a device possibly that has channel numbers for iTunes so that the alternative media will be easy to access.
Well, that's a good point, because one of the things that's always been, and you know, this is something I've been talking about for eons too. You know, when you're dealing with internet-based broadcasting, it's not like it used to be in the car where you just turn the dial or push the scan button and it'll stop on a station.
Right.
You have to, if you'll either find it by accident or you find it because you want to find it, which in turn means that you've got to have an infrastructure out there telling people that it exists, which in turn costs money.
No,
that doesn't work, Jay Cruzen.
By word of mouth.
No, what needs to happen is the freedom of the press was enshrined in the Constitution, and they had an obligation to report on serious matters dealing with our government, dealing with day-to-day happenings in the country and everything else. It needs to go back that way. The Sherman Antitrust Act needs to be used against NBC, ABC, CBS. Break them all the fuck up. You need to take Comcast away from NBC, number one. And all the newspapers are owned by what, 5 to 10 corporations that still put things in print. I mean, that's sick. And they're all owned by multi-billionaires. The media has got to be broken up. It has got to be completely restructured. It has got to be... Something has really got to happen.
Oh, that means you're gonna have to have a serious rethinking and serious restructuring of government in order to accomplish that.
No, not really. Oh, you're right. I mean, Reagan. The media consolidations began under Reagan, stopping enforcing the Fairness Doctrine, and then. The Telecommunications Act under
Clinton. Okay, time out. Yeah, so. You don't want the Fairness Doctrine back, do you?
Yes.
So you want me here at the Horn to have to put on, because I do 3 hours of progressive radio, you want me to have to put on 3 hours of some blathering, insanity-spewing, right-wing piece of shit?
That's not what the Fairness Doctrine
is. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. The Fairness Doctrine dictated that the news part of radio had to be separate from the opinion and the advertising and the profiteering part of it.
The fairness. I worked under the Fairness Doctrine.
And you had to have a separate. You had to have a separate entity. The news and the advertising could not be intertwined at all.
That's simply not true. Right. The news has had advertisements in it for eons.
Let me jump in here, Bob. I don't think the Fairness Doctrine would apply to internet radio. I think it would
apply to
FCC-regulated radio.
The FCC can take jurisdiction as it chooses.
Well, they're not going to take jurisdiction over the internet.
Why not?
Net neutrality, that's why.
They just have taken jurisdiction over the internet based on the net neutrality regulation they just promulgated.
Well, Well, something they're trying to put
through. On the theory that it's a public utility. You can't have different lanes, like one a slow lane and a fast lane, depending on how much you can pay.
Well, that's so, totally separate from what we're talking about.
Well, but to the extent the FCC has regulated it in that aspect as a utility now, that means they have jurisdiction over it. So, I guess as it was understood back in the 70s when it was still in existence, the Fairness Doctrine, and into the 80s, it did only involve broadcast radio, TV. Of course, we didn't have the internet back then, really. But I think the point, as I understand, my dad used to be a sales manager of a TV radio station, or actually it was a TV station in Iowa. And, if they did an editorial as part of the news, they would have to give someone like equal time, like maybe at the
precisely
the next day, at the tail end.
Remember a few weeks ago when Steve, brought up the hilarious All in the Family clip.
Wait.
Where Steve brought up the hilarious All in the Family clip where Archie Bunker presented an opposing viewpoint in which he argued that the best way to stop hijacking was to give everybody on the planes guns.
That was the Fairness Doctrine.
Yes, it was, Jay Cruzan. Now with an opposing viewpoint, WFUK presents Herman Thumbfingers.
No.
And he would stand there,
The thing was that you had to keep your news department separated from your damn broadcast television department or your broadcast radio department. News was news.
Opinion and broadcast shit was opinion and broadcast shit.
News was news. You broadcasted the fucking news. These companies, these stations, these television stations, these radio stations, they don't broadcast news anymore. They broadcast opinion.
Well, actually, their
news that is broadcasted is now influenced by their advertisements.
Jake Cruzan, I think you need to mellow out a little bit.
Fox, throughout its afternoon schedule, they call that their news block. And then the evening schedule is what they call their opinion block. Okay?
Well, I see his point. Something broadcast over, the Lifetime Channel Network is not going to be held to the same standards as your local TV Channel 2 CBS network. One is cable, one is open airways.
That
is correct. One you can put an antenna up and get it. One you can only get through a cable. And there are strict regulations that separate the two.
Absolutely. So when Janet Jackson displayed the nipple o' doom, the fines were levied against the over-the-air broadcasters who carried it, because the FCC had expressed obscenity jurisdiction over those broadcasts. Okay, that's why the South Park can have the running gag about the restaurant that's called Shitty Chicken.
Shouldn't we be focusing on...
Yeah, we don't even have a chicken place anymore.
You know what? There was a chicken place. I went to NYU in New York City, and there was a little chicken place. It was called Cluck You.
Oh, that's great.
Cluck me, baby.
That's great. So Bob, this thing about the kicking chickens, this is about abuse of the chickens by the workers at Tyson, right? That was
yes.
What you were talking about earlier. Because I missed the beginning of that. I figured that's what it was. Okay.
Yes.
Sort of like the Downer cattle being mistreated, right, by people at the meat pack, the beef plants or whatever,
Yeah.
I'll tell you, there's got to be a better way of doing things.
Speak up just a little bit more softly about what I was saying. Because I know I appreciate that, Duncan. You kicked me out because I was getting too loud.
Well, you need to come down off 11.
Yeah, that's okay.
11.
I understand.
You know what? We should all just become vegans.
But
you know?
The thing I was saying about the news is, do you realize, you watch your local news, and you see that, McDonald's has brought back the McRib. That's news.
Well, sure, and look, but that's not, that's not a fairness doctrine thing. That's a laziness of journalism thing. One, news does not happen on the television, okay? At least that's my humble opinion. Two,
but that's actually a symptom of what happened is when the advertisers were allowed on the news portion of the television broadcast, that's what we got.
Well, you know what else you get?
We lost news and we got bullshit every day.
First of all, until and this, I'm not gainsaying you, Jay Cruzan. But first of all, you have to get and anybody who's worked in broadcast news knows what I'm talking about. You have to get an appreciation for the amount of work that goes into producing one crappy 30-minute local newscast. It's easier in some markets than others. In a big market, there's always something happening. But you know what? You got to come up with a 30-minute newscast at WOAY-TV, Oak Hill, Beckley, Bluefield, West Virginia, which is one of the most awful. I mean, it's a laughable newscast. And you know what? And you know what they run?
I get it.
You know what they run, Jay Cruzan?
Yeah, I get it.
PR firms put out packaged, so-called news. It comes with the video already shot. It comes with the script already written.
I get it.
And they run that crap. Do you remember when the Bush administration got stone cold busted for putting out prepackaged news back during the Reign of Error?
Listen.
Oh yeah.
I get all that modern stuff. But back in the day, what used to happen is that the news was separate from the advertising. You didn't advertise shit with your news. Now they advertise shit. Every other news story is some type of fucking advertisement.
I see what you're saying, Jason, is the cross promotions that are in the news.
Yes.
Like McRib is back and so forth.
News,
that's true.
The news department of every radio station, TV station, the news department always lost money.
Right, lost leaders, yeah.
They made money on their television programs and their radio programs that were for whatever else.
And do you know when that model changed?
News,
do you know when that model changed,
that
Jay Cruzan?
That was Reagan.
The news, no, that model changed. ABC Sports. ABC Sports was run by a guy named Rune Arledge.
Was when Reagan
and Rune Arledge was promoted to managing editor or whatever the title was of ABC News, and that is when the model changed. It changed again when Ted Turner invented the 24-hour news cycle, which made that hard work coming up with 30 minutes of news 48 times as difficult.
All of that was allowed by the stopping of the enforcement of the Fairness Doctrine.
The Fairness Doctrine did not state you had to give equal
time to equal opinions. The Fairness Doctrine was all about news was news, opinion was opinion, and broadcast television was broadcast television. It was all separate. You were not allowed to... The people who were broadcasting news were not even allowed to talk with the advertising part of the same station.
Well, but Randy over on the stress line brings up a valid point. Would you jump in, please, Randy?
Yeah, I was just wondering, shouldn't we be unfocused on the Fairness Doctrine and refocused on the 1996 Telecommunications Act?
Yeah, that's
where
what
they consolidated all the media.
That's where you go.
That's
where you go. Never mind, the Fairness Doctrine is dead, buried, and gone, and never coming back. But you can make a whale of a lot of difference just by breaking the bastards up.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. But bring them both back if you ask me. That's just all.
Well, you're not going to get the left and right alike. Will pitch a howling hissy. Either side, both sides will pitch a howling hissy at the idea of bringing back the Fairness Doctrine.
Why not? Because that is the news is they're given First Amendment rights.
They've already got them.
They are the media. They are supposed to know, but they are not they are being bought off by corporations.
Well, that's the 96 Telecommunications Act. That's not the Fairness Doctrine.
Well, it's both.
Can we move on? Keep in mind, I think one thing you got to remember is, despite the separation, between the news and the, let's say, the non-news sections of TV stations, radio stations in the older days, there still were commercials that were run on, during the news, for example, like, commercial breaks. And I think the thing you got to keep in mind is that the whole reason for TV's invention was not to entertain people, but it was to sell shit to people. It was for advertisers. The fact that you have this Fairness Doctrine, it was just sort of to put a little bit of lipstick on the pig, so to speak, and require stations to, broadcasters to devote some of their airtime to matters involving the public interest. And they actually had to show that they were, broadcasting the public interest in order to, continue
to
have rights.
Back in the day, if they did not broadcast in the public interest, they lost their license.
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did, and that's what Ronald Reagan revoked.
Oh, I can't tell you the number of stations that never lost their license.
Can we move on to something else you talked about,
that's
Bob?
Fine. That's fine. Yeah, let's move on. I'm ready to move on too. I made my points.
Yeah. Well,
okay. One more thing.
But wait, please, Rick, because there are other people that also want to make a final point too. Ron and Raleigh just noted, Rune Arledge moved the news division into the entertainment division. It had nothing to do with the Fairness Doctrine. The Fairness Doctrine was still in force. The equal time rules are still in force, but will disappear at the behest of the Obama administration. Meanwhile, Marty, with a novel on it. Marty,
no, they're not.
Meanwhile, Marty says what needs to happen is somehow the Sherman Act, without anything resembling changes, needs to be promoted to a constitutional amendment. And that's one of the more novel pieces of thinking I've seen lately. That's a dandy.
That's a dandy.
Sparky, at your behest, we'll find something else. Any thoughts? By the way, one other thing, 17 minutes after the hour in this final third hour of the program, and we got about $99.50 to go in meeting Chris's Yellow Knife finish the end of the week in the black challenge. $99.50, $9.95, 10 people, 9.95 people at $10, what have you. So there's that, and then there's a little bit more, and we'll actually finish to the good. I think it's like it's 30, 40, $50. I'm not sure. So there's that.
I wanted to talk about the marijuana.
Oh, go right ahead.
Okay, go.
Hey, see you, Randy.
Bye.
Good to hear from Randy. Go ahead, Sparky. Oh, wait. Wrong button. There we go.
Class one designation should be revoked. I mean, I don't know how many of you have ever watched a show on Viceland called Weed Etiquette.
Not I.
Oh, there are some shows on there that it will just tug at your heartstrings for the people that moved to Colorado.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To help their kids.
Uh-huh. I'm aware of that.
Get,
oh, yeah.
You know, the oil.
Mm-hmm. CBDs.
Yeah, so they can stop the
pain and cancer.
And
yeah.
It was a gift to the prison industrial complex, too, Spark. They make money off of, you know, throwing nonviolent, passive people that just like to toke up every once in a while in jail. They make big money off of that.
Yeah, well, I think there's, maybe you're mistaken, I think there's five states that have marijuana initiatives on the ballot this November.
West Virginia ain't one of them. We're not that smart.
I think you're right, Sparky. I think maybe even Arizona State has one.
Arizona, Nevada.
California.
California, of course.
Yeah.
And I can't.
Illinois? Or no. No, not maybe not Illinois.
Florida?
Maybe.
Hmm. Well, when I lived in Washington, I voted yes for recreational marijuana in Washington State. And now that I'm in Arizona, Stan, obviously I'm going to vote for it, too. They do have medical marijuana, but I think they're voting for the recreational now.
I mean, you know, the whole idea behind the medical marijuana, it's kind of a joke. Like, you can get it for anything. You can get a card if you have, like, claim you have migraine headaches, you can't fall asleep. I mean, you name it. You know, anxiety, generalized anxiety. I mean,
I don't understand. It's an herb. It's a weed that does so many good things. Why? Yeah. Oh, why? Is it Big Pharma?
Of course.
Well, Big Pharma's part of it.
There's so many people that want to get off prescription drugs.
Yeah.
But it's going to cut into the profits of Big Pharma. I mean, you can't have that. This is America, after all.
And it's not just Big Pharma. It's the jail industrial complex, the prison. It's a business system now.
Oh, man, yes. Police departments make big money.
Well, and look at the DEA. You know, you can always ask Cui Bono. You've got a whole bunch of DEA agents who are just, you know, out of work. If we're not spending obscene, horse-gagging amounts of money chasing down bales of weed.
And then the local police departments get a certain cut of any forfeitures that they make. You know,
I guess, Bob, that's why the DEA just announced a decision that they would not reschedule marijuana.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about in the first hour.
They don't want to stop chasing down those bales of weed.
They want to keep it Schedule 1 on the same lines as heroin, assholes. LSD. I mean, that's ridiculous. You're talking about flowers, you know?
Yeah.
How many people out there have aching joints with like something to rub on their on their knees, elbows?
I'm gonna be honest with you, Sparky. Right now, if I could have some medical marijuana, I've got some pains that could go away.
Well, how many of you ever heard of a bag bomb?
Oh, sure.
Anybody from a cow area?
My son took powdered, shredded powdered marijuana and mixed it into the bag bomb, and we use it now every so often. If you got soreness or something in anything. Your elbow. I rub it on my knee every now and again, but most of the time, vaping just helps me with my knee pain and it goes away.
For me, what's wrong is that we are blocking the study, which could be comparing it. A lot of people are putting it toward applications that other materials probably would be better, but since they don't have adequate data, trustful data, they have nothing to compare to. For instance, for the pain, I would think that emu oil, a chemical in the oil excreted by emu follicles, that would work better for your pain. But there's no comparison to Delta-2.
I've used the emu oil and I've used pot rub before.
Okay, well then,
and they both work about the same. I mean, the pot rub seems to work a little bit better,
but the emu oil is probably more expensive. But
and the cannabis is cruelty free.
Right. Well, there's another aspect of this too.
Oh, the emus love to be brushed.
There's another aspect of this too. There's a gigantic lobby on the alcohol, an alcohol lobby, that says marijuana is toxic. We don't want to, and they're financing candidates and they're saying we don't want marijuana legalized because of blah, 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 blah. And it's coming from the alcohol side. Because,
they're the ones that are financing
a lot easier to harvest.
They're the ones that are financing the vote no on the marijuana legalization proposition here in California.
Exactly.
The price of corn would fall a lot as well.
As I mentioned in the first hour, Snork, there were two announcements by the DEA. One was that they were damned well not going to move cannabis off of Schedule One. Much less attention was paid to the announcement they made that they will ease the rules for research on cannabis.
At least that's a little bit better, but will they actually do it? For instance, when it was legalized in Illinois for medical purposes, they just didn't authorize anybody to actually sell it.
If you look at the studies and you look at the entire populations, if you legalize cannabis, alcohol use goes down dramatically.
Well, so would a lot of crimes, because it's a different type of action in the brain, so it doesn't make you violent.
So would DUIs. So would deaths in vehicle accidents. Everything goes down. But the alcohol lobby is really, really hard on against this shit. And I don't know where I heard that. Where did I hear that? Was that on your program, Bob, or was that on...
I don't think so, but I mean, it's...
I think it may have been on Hartman.
Well, I know, talking about the
alcohol lobby going whole on with a big ass... A big enthusiasm to block any legalization of marijuana.
Jen in Australia just pointed out something via a message. The August 8th Nicole Sandler program, Cannabis Cures, documents the astounding results that Rick Simpson had with homemade hemp oil, giving it to friends and neighbors in Canada. She recommends it highly as an amazing one-hour interview.
Yeah. One thing, though, is overgeneralized, because cancer is a spectrum of disorders. And I believe it helps for certain parts in certain disorders. We know that there are chemicals missing that could be added if there was adequate study. Maybe that'll happen now. But items that could be added that are available now that could be added to it as companion treatment that aren't, just because the studies aren't there.
I got that. No, I'm kidding.
When my wife died, I had her body sent to a university for study to verify research that she was doing before she got really bad. And she had the cancer that normally kills in 4 months with treatment. She was misdiagnosed for the first year, and her treatment plan that she developed, because she thought she was unable to have potassium, ended up being she went a year without treatment and then survived two more years after that. And the professors that I had involved with this said that it was the potassium that she took out of her diet stopped the cancer from being metastatic, because it uses what's called potassium ion channeling to spread. It can be done by another chemical found in the ocean But I can't get into that one right now. But the thing is that it needs to be part of a spectrum, and I'm concerned that if people think it's the only thing that you need to do, that they'll stop with the other treatments that need to be done along with it in order for it to work.
Well, I look at it this way, you know, it's multi-level. Like I look at it, I stand back and I see we have the highest cancer rates going on, and for many reasons, you know, of course, environmental, toxic businesses that are dumping poisons and everything into our elements of the earth and the water and the air. And I mean, but we know what's going on, but yet, you know, we collectively, there is a refusal and a to look at humankind in general as worthy of living a good life, of people all deserving quality lives and health and well-being. So you have that as the overarching philosophy, and then you get into not allowing research, having tobacco and alcohol freely, free for anyone to use, and but the marijuana and hemp, that can't be used. There are all kinds of things available that can be researched, but it all boils down to people with power that don't give a shit about other people's lives, that just want to make money. And that's what it's all about, basically.
Welcome to capitalism.
Hold on a second. Let me add something to that. They want to put people in prison for possessing everything that you have just stated.
Well, of course. And I was a prison nurse. So you can imagine what my experience was, couldn't you?
And you know what?
Law enforcement doesn't legalize, and the prison industrial complex, so they don't want it legalized either. It's all about money. It has nothing to do with it being evil or anything.
Well, Steve, you're almost exactly echoing the words of Mark down in Florida, who just wrote a couple of minutes ago and said the military-industrial private prison complex makes way more money by forcing alcohol, pharmaceutical, and private prisons upon Americans. Also, remember, many drugs have are made of petroleum-based derivatives.
And let's not forget the alcohol industry either. They don't want it either.
Fuck it. I think they should legalize every drug. Decriminalize anyway. And if somebody is a drug addict, it should be treated as a health problem.
Yeah.
Nobody should be demonized for using the drug or whatever. There is a huge amount of research that shows, okay, all right, wait a minute.
So, you mentioned a moment ago, Alex, you said environmental causes. Just a little thing to throw out there for general consumption. No, not consumption. But do we remember when the abandoned mine went sideways and poisoned the Animas River that runs from Colorado into New Mexico? Remember that?
No. When did this happen?
Yes, Bob.
Bob. And so guess what? A year later, the toxins, otherwise known as poisons, from that mine are still poisoning the river and thereby poisoning people at the rate of 500 gallons per minute. Hold on, Jay Cruzen.
Thank you, sir.
Among other things, 2,000 Navajo farmers and ranchers have been unable to water or irrigate their crops after the accident. The Navajo Nation declared a state of emergency. And here's why I kind of clued in on the story when Alex said, and of course, environmental causes. That's one mine. That is one mine. Across 12 states in the American West, there are 161,000 similar abandoned mines. 161,000 similar abandoned mines.
That's right, yes.
And 20% of them, about 33,000 of those mines, are pouring poisons into the groundwater.
Oh, God.
So, you know, there are going to be... Snork, check me on this. Tell me if I'm wrong. It's inevitable that there are going to be cancer clusters in those areas. But if you go to the doctor and say, "Why do I have it?" the doc will go, "Oh no," because we run for all we are worth away from reality, and the reality is that corporations, these mining interests, among others, have been freely permitted to perform involuntary experiments on human populations. I mean, I'm sensitive to that because there's one, it'll be about 20, 30 years worth of experimentation. There's one going on now among 300,000 people in 9 counties in West Virginia. There's another one going on in Flint, Michigan. But it turns out, and this goes back to my response every time somebody says, "Well, Bob, why don't you leave West Virginia and go where?"
Where? In the cities. In the big major cities for years I've known about. Where do the poorest people live? Where are all the incinerators and all the big factory smokestacks with spewing all the horrible chemicals are? I mean, this is going on. This is just part of America. This is what we do.
This is freedom, damn it, Alex. Freedom.
Many of our biggest cities, the poor areas, were where they sampled what would happen to a population if we took the nuclear waste from the desert and dumped it in their neighborhoods.
That's sobering.
They pretended that they were fogging for mosquitoes at night and sprayed it in Minneapolis, Boston, and St. Louis and other towns.
Well, consider the place. Fracking. Fracking water used to melt ice on roads. I know we do that in West Virginia. And then, what was it, a couple of years ago when the Missouri River froze really, really, really solid? What was the response? They dumped coal ash on it to melt the ice. And I know, Snork, what a lovely substance coal ash is.
Yeah. What way I like to put it is think of cancer, toxic chemicals that you can be exposed to as buying a lottery ticket to get cancer. Oh, just a few items. In fact, we all have cancer in us all the time, but we have immune systems that kill it. And we have systems in our body that will take care of a few. We just can't take a hold of a bunch. So what happens is basically we are living in a toxic soup that is a whole bunch of lottery tickets. And every time you get exposed to whatever chemical it is, and we just keep getting more and more tickets. And you know that as your pile of lottery tickets gets larger and larger and larger, you have a better chance of getting cancer.
Yeah, because you've got more tickets.
Yeah. So in some of these areas where they have really high density, it's like they bought more tickets than what they even need to win.
Bob, did you see that story the other day where they cut down the amount of fracking waste they were injecting into Oklahoma, and the earthquakes are starting to subside?
Yeah, surprise, surprise. But I'm sure Jim Inhofe is there to tell people that it's a cruel hoax. Yeah, that's just cause and effect, isn't it?
It seems like it.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, hey, what? What's up, Steve?
Yeah, I would like to pick your brain a minute on this Steve from Virginia that climbed the Trump Towers. Have you seen the video of him? He's crazy.
I saw a little bit of that, but I felt like
he's
I was
crazier than a loon. I mean,
I felt like I was participating in some sort of sad voyeuristic experience with a mentally not healthy person.
But he said he was doing that to get his fearless leader's attention.
Oh, what an idiot.
I just posted a video of it in the chat room. This dude's crazy, and I really think a lot of these Trump supporters, they're nuts, man. They're nuts. I mean, I don't want to paint everybody with a broad brush.
Well,
we
don't call them Trumpanzees for nothing.
But, you know,
Trumple Finskins.
I really think a lot of these folks are nuts, you know?
I watched a video today that was on Democratic Underground. You know, Triumph the Insult Dog.
Love him.
does things on Hulu now. Well, they're doing a summer series or something, and they had a group of Trump supporters come into a room, and they tried to sell them on Trump commercials. And it's just, you have to watch it. I'll see if I can find the link and post it. But I watched that today, and I went, some of these people are just absolutely
crazy.
Stark raving mad. Man, they'll believe anything.
Well, we've overpopulated this nation with a bunch of sacks of hammers in a bag. You know, just ridiculous how we've, you know, perpetuated these people. I don't know.
Don't discount the long, I mean, centuries long seething undercurrent of fury and hatred that lives in white America.
Did you read the story today about the teacher exodus from Kansas, Stan?
Yeah.
No.
You would too.
More and more teachers are leaving.
If you listen to these Trump speeches, they will have you questioning your own sanity. And I was talking to an 81-year-old woman today, said that reminded her of post-WW2 rhetoric. And she was serious, and she was very concerned of what is transpiring. I mean, this
pretty soon we can rename Kansas Stan to Idiocracy Land.
Idiot Stan. Well, how about the whole country? Oh, Idiot Stan. Some Fuckistan.
Well, how about
Stan has Hitlery 4 points ahead, Bob. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay, so how about the case out of Taliban, Indiana? Where the manager of a Family Dollar, Dollar General, something like that, Family Dollar in Gary, Indiana, a woman walks in wearing her Muslim headgear, and she took video when the hit the fan, and the manager walks up to her and says, if you can't remove that from your face, I need you to leave the store. You have to understand, too, this because the woman said, this is a religious garment. And the woman says, you have to understand, too, that this is a high-crime area where we get robbed a lot. You need to remove that from your face or remove yourself from the store. Remove that from your face or remove yourself from the store, please. I'm the manager, and I'm telling you to leave my store. Have a blessed day. My name's Janie, and have a blessed day. And if you don't leave, I'm calling the cops. I'll have them come and remove you.
That's frightening. When you start from a point of hate, it's not going to end well.
The Family Dollar's going to write a check. And this woman, if she chooses to push it, Janie there, will become a persecuted right-wing Christian celebrity over to the Fox. Right?
Yeah, we'll probably see her on Hannity next week sometime.
And she's being a persecuted for her faith in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Now, but that's not to say that there's not a legitimate issue there. You know, interestingly, as a response to the Klan, after the Klan had gotten out of control, a lot of states passed anti-masking statutes. Those statutes were often then used against labor organizers and pissed off strikers who might use a bandana over their faces to keep from being identified so that the thugs, the gun thugs, wouldn't then go and kill their families. But, I mean, so your God wants you to wear a hat, or the Flying Spaghetti Monster wants you to wear a colander. You still see your face.
Or your sky spook. Insert here.
Yeah, your great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky wants you to wear a shawl. Well, we can all still see your face. And you know, France has gone through tumult over this because, you know, they're trying to maintain their civil society there, you know, where people are free to practice their religions, but are kind of asked not to be assholes about it in public. And, you know, naturally there are people out there who feel the need to go around in public in a beekeeper suit. And, I don't have any regard for organized religion, but I acknowledge the freedom of people to practice as they wish. But I don't think that secular society has an obligation to abase itself before any particular faith. I mean, live and let live on the one hand. And Janie there should have understood. No, that woman was not coming in a whatever they call it, an abaya, hijab, whatever. I mean, hijab's just a scarf, but this woman apparently had her face covered. She wasn't going to rob the family dollar. She was probably going to, you know, buy some scouring pads because she was never allowed out of the home and had to stay there and work all the time, you know, because she's a, you know, sin-covered female. That's why she can't show her face, you know, because sin. But it seems like we make things harder than they have to be, and that's frustrating.
Well, Bob, I may have brought this up before, but it's worth tabling again. There's a hormone called oxytocin, not to be confused with Rush's drug of choice.
Yeah, not Oxycontin, oxytocin.
Oxytocin, and it's released during any kind of bonding that you do. You know, they first discovered it during breastfeeding, or when you're with a group of people, or you're in a chat room and somebody laughs at one of your jokes, and it's very, very powerful. And I really think that's how the Trump thing, and even to go back to 1930, I really think that's how all that got started.
Well, it wasn't the oxytocin that started it all. It's people's asshole hatred for others. And then when that hatred is stimulated and they have a venue to air their hatred and to stroke their hatred, well, then there she blows with the oxytocin.
Right. Well, A leads to B, right. So we're on the same page.
And, 13 minutes to go. And I guess we're going to close the program in a hole. $99.50 to go to meet Chris's Yellow Knife in the week even challenge, and a little bit beyond that. But anybody listening that wants to knock that down a bit is
okay,
more than welcome so to do. And I'm not pointing that at the chat room. I mean, just anybody.
Bob?
Yeah.
As you were leaving the air last week, I don't know that you heard me. I was going to kick in 20, And since I haven't kicked in 20 yet, I'm going to kick in 30. It'll include the 20 that I should have put in plus a $10 penalty assessment.
Oh. Well, leave it to the former IRS lawyer to know about the penalty assessments.
There you go.
Okay, great. So that takes it down to $69.50.
Oh, and I donated $100 last week, and I just want to let you know it's because without Bob Kincaid, I would be in a loony bin.
Thank you very kindly.
I'm sure you would, Alec.
Boss Man Wayne was tickled pink, tickled plum pink. To see it.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, hey, what? What's happening, Jake Reason?
Y'all close it out.
Yeah, of course, let's see. I presume Malloy's live tonight?
No, I'm saying I'll close out your hole.
Oh, you'll close out the hole. Thank you. Thank you, Jake Reason. Thank you very kindly. So, ta-da!
Because if you weren't here, I wouldn't have anybody to lecture me or to argue against. So.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to lecture, Jay Cruzen.
I know, but you do so much. But that's okay. It's okay. I understand.
No, you'd be.
Some other day off the air, we'll get some really good conversations in. But I'm going to close your hole out just because I love you.
Thank you,
wow,
brother.
Jay.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. Thank you very, very kindly.
And that was, what, $69.50?
Yep.
Okay.
And that'll leave.
Another Friday on the front porch miracle.
Another Friday on the... Wait a minute. And every time a cowbell rings, an angel gets its wings.
Every time the cowbell rings, someone's doing the 69.
Hey!
Don't wear out that cowbell.
I think every time a cowbell rings, a liberal is born.
There you go.
Another Chris Hedges enters the world.
A heathen birth.
There you go. Well, I was off the air a little while, Bob, because I got a call from my about my desert trip ticket that I
Geezer Palooza.
Yeah, Geezer Palooza, Geezer Cello, whatever you want to call it. And it turns out that the section I'm in, they're either going to eliminate it because it's going to have obstructed views, or they're going to, like, relocate the section somewhere else. So I exchanged
like
my
Cucamonga?
Ticket for one that's, like, closer to the center.
Oh, cool.
He's probably not in a handicap zone because that's probably full.
Well, that could be, or it could be where they're going to put all the speakers. Maybe they're going to put the speakers to the side of the stage, and then I would, like, blast my hearing out, you know?
What's Geezer Palooza?
That's the desert trip coming up in October with all the super bands, you know, like...
McCartney.
Paul McCartney, Neil Young, The Who.
Oh,
Dylan. Isn't Bob Dylan going to be there?
Dylan, Roger Waters, those six acts.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, good news. On the heels of what Jay Cruzen said... Matt just jumped in and said, put me down for $69.50. So that will actually completely wipe everything out, and we will finish a little better than even for the week. So thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly, Matt, as well. And a note coming in from Mike in Cascadia. He says, based on the mining story I brought up a few minutes ago, I'm a Montana native. Speaking of mines, the Berkeley Pit in Butte, filling up with acid. Every time it rains, fish die in the Clark's Fork. You still can't eat fish out of that river. Sad, because it's great fishing. The book by the great Norman McLean and Robert Redford film classic River Runs Through It took place on the Clark's Fork. It's a true story. When Redford made the film, he refused to film it on the Clark's Fork since it is still so polluted. Another story is Libby. I know about Libby. And it's vermiculite mine. Vermiculite is processed into asbestos. A Reagan buddy, W.R. Grace, owned that company, and Reagan relieved their liability. Read up on that. W.R. Grace, Libby, etc. Yeah, and that was and W.R. Grace was central to the book, which turned into a movie called A Civil Action, about people being poisoned, environmentally poisoned, in Massachusetts as well. Mike adds, now the GOP platform wants all federal public land to be given to the states. So mining will happen on steroids. It's in their platform, Federal Land Disposal. And I'll kick in $25. Thank you, Mike. Thank you very kindly. It's worth remembering that elections have consequences. Yes, they do.
I got something.
Not really. They really don't have any damn consequences because you know that the people who are pulling levers of power control both parties.
Well, there's one that's better than the other, at least, Jason. It's all relative.
Well, you know, you can give your money to one or the other. It doesn't fucking make a difference.
Well.
And this, a note on the way out the door from Jen in Australia. Still waking up. Sorry, too much brown liquor last night. I'm jealous. So it's never, nothing is never going to happen. I sympathize. It's easy to believe that everything is broken. But sorry, that's a myopic view. Everything is not broken. I reject such temper tantrum perspectives because throwing a wobbly, as I say down here, and throwing it to Trump will turn never into over. Let me get this straight. I'm still foggy from a late night. Is the demand for surgical specific changes for everything to be torn down, baby out with the bathwater? If it is, the latter, if it's the latter, tell me how that looks. What's the process of tearing everything down? Because everything and never. I understand the impatience, and boy, yeah, the desperation, because, and this is where Skype is not helping me. Yeah. Hold on. Desperation because so many things do not work. Big media, banks, pharma, and yes, the damned unconstitutionality of so many things, such as separation of church and state, and the exasperating lack of consequences giving in to becoming frantic. But demanding that everything needs to be broken up, what's the saying? A huge ship turns around slowly. Jen says, I would call for a measured look at the progress we are making. Everything is not broken. Progress is being made. Example, gay people can get married. Granted, they can still be denied, you know, housing, employment, that sort of thing. In 20 to 30 states, but they can be married. I offer only one example because, well, I have a hangover. But I reject the bratish perspective that everything is broken. If we assimilate that reality, then individually we become broken and thus paralyzed. And how then do we continue the work? And that's why I said, very early on, a little bit ago, sometimes we must take what is given, and that must be enough.
Okay.
So I will I'll wrap this up and close out another Friday on the front porch of scintillating and exciting Friday on the front porch conversation. Oh my God, I had no idea. Mark in Florida just pointed out that W.R. Grace and Company owns Applebee's, military industrial complex chicken fingers. Sweet Jesus. Well, remember that next time you need something in the way of fast corporate dining. A reminder, the Friday on the Front Porch conversation will continue in the Horn Malloy Skype chat room. Horn Malloy Skype chat group room. Pick one. After Malloy this evening. He'll wrap up at about 11 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Jump on in if you've never participated. It's a blast. It's a hoot. Thank you all very kindly. And hey, thanks very kindly to our buddy Robert in Australia. Haven't donated for a while. The car is now fixed. And the Aussie dollar is at U.S. 78 cents. So here's a few bucks. Thank you very, very kindly, Robert in Australia. And away we go. Have a happy weekend, a lovely weekend, and we'll be back for More and Monday on Monday, the 15th day of August, as summer 2016 runs away from us like it doesn't like us anymore. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, makes all of this go. Thank you all for your participation, your kind comments. Thank you for listening to the podcast, your emails. They make my each and every day. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, everybody.